And boom goes the dynamite. And boom goes the dynamite.
Good evening, and welcome to episode 18 of Boom Goes the Dynamite, the AEW Dynamite Review Show here on the Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network. I'm Jeffrey. With me today is Lawrence and Chris. Lawrence, Chris, how are yous?
I'm pretty good. It's good to be back again, and it's been a little bit, so I'm glad to be back talking about this weird company again.
Weird. I don't know if that was the word I was looking for with them, but okay.
Fair enough. And yeah, things are well here. Just back into the fold and ready to cover what we had this week around, which a mixed bag of different stuff, but we'll break down said stuff accordingly.
Did anybody watch Dark? Because I did.
Yes.
Not. You did. Okay, did. Chris, I'm going to let you take the wheel here then.
I'll just be quick about it. Marco and Jungle Boy look good in their tag match against Cutler and Sunny Kiss. Sunny Kiss has been getting better and better, and hopefully we see plenty of him in Dynamite sooner rather than later. Hopefully much, much sooner.
Yeah, he's been kind of relegated. He's been kind of relegated to the dark at this point.
I did hear there was some rumor that he was working with Dustin Rhodes specifically to make sure to get over, I think, some sort of like stage fright thing going on, and maybe that's why
they
held back on him.
Oh, okay.
But then again, I have no confirmation on that, so take that as you will. But if that is the situation, you know, good on him for realizing that about himself and making the steps to improve in that situation so that when the opportunity comes, he's ready for it.
Well, if they do that, I hope that Dustin is still his tag partner so we can you know, continue the Kiss and Makeup team there.
Yeah. And that was a good impromptu team that they had the 1 week there. And if you're going to make tag teams as important as you keep saying they are each and every week in your broadcast, hey, more of them are welcome, if anything. So that ended up happening. There was some sort of therapy segment with Brandi Rhodes, which I skipped over entirely. Best Friends had a good match against, well, a good match by their standards, but the opponent was Sean Spears. They were limited to doing so much with him and Colin Delaney on that corner. So just continuing the whole Spears and totally trying to find Spears a tag partner thing.
Wait. I'm sorry. Colin Delaney?
Yes.
He was my partner
for that week. Yes.
Yeah, he was a security guard. He was a security guard last week during that one segment.
Oh my god, the last time I think I seen Colin Delaney anywhere was in like Beyond a few years ago.
Yeah. He's been doing the local talent route for a little bit now. I know he had some duties in like 205 Live a little while back as well. So he's been around doing stuff in that regard. Trying to think from Dark, because there was another a very bad match between Hikaru Shida and Mal, where even Hikaru Shida could only do so much with all of the shenanigans. Awesome Kong got attacked in the aftermath by Mel and Luther, so what you will.
Yeah, so are we saying that maybe abandon this whole... something else that happened on this show, too, coming up that made me think that... Are they actually abandoning this Nightmare Collective thing, then?
Yeah, I think that must be the case, or they're maybe just, like, kind of... I don't know. I mean, maybe they're just doing that... Like, was their name Mel and Dr. Luther together?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or something?
That could be. And you know what? It is what it is at that point. At the very least, it seems like they've listened to the reception that this whole secondary quote that they decided to introduce after the initial quote has been getting decided, well, maybe there is one too many quotes after all. So
right, but I mean, so of course you end the angle by kicking out the, you know, the most over member of this part of this angle, which was Awesome Kong.
Listen, if this means we get Awesome Kong away from Brandi Rhodes in any way, shape, or form, I am 100% behind that move. Whoever did that, bravo. But then the biggest thing off of that was a match from the cruise that didn't get aired on TV, And for good reason, they only had one singular camera angle from the outside that followed along. No hard cam or anything like that. But it was an actual honest-to-goodness intergender tag match between Kip Sabian and Penelope Ford against Kenny Omega and Riho. And it was actually a good match. I will give them that. And they definitely didn't shy away from the intergender stuff, and they did it pretty well. So kudos to them on that, and the, you know, big brain on Kenny Omega, which apparently none of us lowly mortals can feasibly understand.
Yes, us drooling mouth breathers will try to get through the rest of this episode without the cerebral nuances of Kenny Omega. But with that being said, we go now live to Huntsville, Alabama for AEW Dynamite Episode 18, live from the Von Braun Center Arena. Your hosts, Jim Ross, Tony Schiavone, Excalibur, and we start right in with the match I pretty much wanted to see on this show, Jon Moxley versus Ortiz.
Yes.
Before we get into this match, can we just gush about what Jon Moxley did over the weekend?
Yeah.
Jon
Moxley is living his best life. Let's just keep it simple in that regard. And talk about an absolute madman going to Japan, wrestling two shows in Sapporo, immediately flying back to be here for this episode, and most likely on his way to a flight all the way to Osaka as of right now.
Can we also talk about number one? They kept talking about how Ortiz is, you know, very, you know, he's tough, and they're dealing with thugs. I'm thinking he just spent the weekend clobbering this shit out of while getting this shit clobbered out of him by Minoru freaking Suzuki. And also, along with that, Can we admire Moxley's professionalism because he was still selling the eye in New Japan? Like,
yeah. Or as we've come to call it, practice for Minoru at this point.
That's right.
The eye patch is basically, if we're going to make references here, it's like, you know, guys in early Dragon Ball Z with weighted clothing limiting their power levels or whatnot. So,
oh, wow.
You call it early Dragon Ball Z, I call it mid-period Dragon Ball, but anyway.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. It does date back all the way to even the 22nd Tenkaichi Budokan, but we're not keeping score.
So, anyway, long story short, Jon Moxley, professional till the end. And this was a fun match.
Yeah. I really dug it. It got to show off Ortiz a little bit more as well, which I was a big fan of, too.
Lawrence, you got any comments?
It was pretty much what you would want this to be. I mean, it was a solid, like, you know, 8-minute brawl. They just they did a lot of the, you know, just outside, just like, you know, Ortiz just is a pretty good plunder guy, and that's basically what they did. It was pretty good.
I mean, it never got to the stakes of the dueling guardrails that Moxley and Suzuki got into over the weekend.
Oh,
but
God.
Gang, if nothing else, you need to seek out the Jon Moxley and Kazuchika Okada versus Minoru Suzuki and Taichi tag match from the first day of the New Beginning in Sapporo. On this past Saturday, just seriously, that match is one of my favorite matches of 2020 so far.
Yeah, fun tag. I would even argue, like, to an extent, at the very least, find the moment in the 8-man tag the following night with Moxley, Roppongi 3K, and Taguchi, where literally Minoru and Moxley both boot Taguchi at the same time to get him out of the way.
That was brilliant. I love that. I did love that. I have a couple of other notes from this match. Of course, Jericho and Sammy Guevara were on commentary. Real quick, I did appreciate the one line that Jericho made where he said, "Downtown to Chinatown," you know, trying to talk tough. I just want to point out, just for geography's sake, the Wintrust Arena, which is where revolution will be taking place is mere blocks from Chinatown in Chicago. So, it was actually kind of accurate. Not accurate. You could clearly see that when Moxley was holding that car, the keys to that car, it was clearly a house key.
Oh yeah,
100% house key.
Yeah, and you like hit him in the forehead.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah. So, but we'll get back to this later because this is.
The imagery work in the aftermath. Jon Moxley did pick up the win, just as a real quick addendum to all that, and then of course post match back on Santana, which stabbed him in the eye with the key to the forehead, technically the forehead, but hey, you know it. It sold it to the crowd properly.
Clearly with the key to someone's house, too. So.
Yeah.
All right. Moving on. We actually got like a lot of matches in quick succession here.
We did.
The second match was apparently a number one contenders match for the AEW World Tag Team titles, in which the recently dethroned champions, SCU, SoCal Uncensored, go up against Best Friends. And, this match was just kind of there, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Standard fair tag.
Orange Cassidy laying down when everybody was just, like, dead on the outside was hilarious.
That was the moment of the match, honestly.
Yeah.
She's just like, well, I guess I better join in.
Yeah, it's like, oh, shit. Okay. Orange Cassidy is still the most over guy in the roster that has not actually wrestled a match yet.
Amazing.
And
I for one cannot wait for this Minoru Suzuki tie-up.
Orange Cassidy match. My God.
Oh my God.
Wait. Back up. Pump the brakes. What?
You didn't Joey hear Janela about Spring this.
Yeah, Joey Janela Spring Break 4. Minoru Suzuki versus Orange Cassidy is a thing that is happening in 2020. Like,
oh God, Orange Cassidy is dead, isn't he?
I don't know.
I don't know. I mean,
it is Suzuki. This is the guy who has, you know, he has wrestled, you know, Mecha Mummy and 10-year-old girls. So, I mean,
yes, this is 100% his brand right there, like legitimately.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, then.
Like, here's the thing. Like, most of our brains are in 2020. I think Joey Janela just has that weird paradigm where if he gets hit in the head one too many times, his brain somehow transforms him into like a 30-30 version, and somehow we get this shit for Spring Break cards.
In the year 2525. Anyway. Unfortunately, this also means that the Scorpio Sky mega push continues because SCU won the match, and we're so now they are going to be the number one contenders. Although I have a bone to pick with that, with a result that happens later on in this show.
So the Dark Order,
try to recruit Orange Cassidy. That didn't go to plan.
And again, I mean, out of all of the recruits, out of the Dark Order so far, Orange Cassidy is the one that's most logical, given the fact that he's the most over person with the entire crowd. And if the Dark Order wants to be recognized and noticed and adored and all that stuff, I mean, freshly squeezed is the way to go to get that kind of recognition. So
yeah, but you know, he ain't having that shit. So
nah, he has hands to put in pockets and low dangerous kicks to deal out, which, by the way, just a quick note from Dark, the highlight of that particular tag match involving Best Friends and Spears and Delaney, Orange Cassidy and Tully Blanchard in a hands and pockets square up in the center of the ring.
Oh, shit.
That was something else, to say the least. And it just makes me realize, again, that Tully Blanchard is still better at his job than his own supposed client. So take that for what you will.
So in the end, of course, you know, the Dark Order pretty much wash Orange Cassidy after that. But then, brings out Christopher Daniels, and, you know, we get a face-off that leads to nothing. So
So why do they want Daniels so much? What are we figuring out here?
As we theorized last week on episode 17 of Boom Goes the Dynamite, I think this is all a big reference to the fact that Daniels was allegedly supposed to be in both WWF and WCW, the head of, you know, the secret head of some mystic, you know, order cult type thing, and it just never happened either way. So now they're bringing Daniels in to maybe finally make it happen.
And I guess playing up to that during his early TNA days and ROH days as well too, kind of, you know, there's some history there where evil cult leader does seem to be something that would be up his alley.
So who's the I want to figure out who this voice is, what are they calling him again? I keep forgetting.
The Exalted One, I believe, is what it is.
The Exalted One. Who, all right, whose guess is on who's the Exalted One?
Ole Anderson.
Oh, I like that answer. My guess was going to be Scott Lost.
Yeah, good, nice PWG reference there, Lawrence. Good work.
Okay. I like that.
I had Super Dragon, but having seen him in person enough times without the mask, yeah, unfortunately, he's not up to par to do this kind of stuff anymore. Unfortunately.
Oh, damn. Did you just like shoot call out like Super Danny for a short stuff? Like, wow, Chris.
Wow. Damn. Jeez, oh Pete.
If I die, I die. It is what it is.
Yeah, you're gonna get your ass turned off. I don't know what to tell you.
Drink a toast to my memory after I get curb stomped into a concrete pavement somewhere in Los Angeles.
And on that note, speaking of a curb job, the third match had Dr. Britt Baker, DMD. Of course, I think we're now fully into the heel turn because she's now wearing black. So,
yes,
of course, that means she's a heel, even though, you know, most of the roster wears black, no matter what alignment they have.
Again, she also, before we go any further into, like, the opponent and stuff like that, because I actually caught a bit of the fight TV dark feed that did the stuff in between commercials, she actually cut a decent promo for once. Like, actually a full heel, basically going, I've seen the teeth of everybody in the front row and I could pay my student loans off just based off of all of you over here, kind of thing. Damn. It's like, and I'll even give you a discount because I'm just such a nice, wholesome person, which, you know what? Good on you for finally getting your shit together, Britt, at least on the promo side, because, yeah.
Yeah, this has actually kind of worked. I gotta say, like, even though she's still a shit-ass wrestler, this is at least a good step in the right direction in terms of her just being like a character that people can just not like.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
So,
well, you know, I still kind of like her herself just because of that that Bourdain episode that we saw her in. But you know, anyway, that's ancient history now. Anyway, Dr. Britt Baker, DMD, going up against Dynamite debutante, Yuka Sakazaki from Tokyo Joshi Pro.
They had one job with her theme music. One job, and they failed miserably. Fuck this company.
Yeah, this was a match, and she was like trying to do things, but like it was like Britt Baker didn't know how to like take those things.
Yeah,
and it was just it was a mess. I thought it was an absolute mess. I mean, mm-hmm. I was like embarrassed, like at how like at just how bad this was.
Yeah.
And it's something we touch based on a couple of times at this point is just Britt Baker's speed in terms of taking bumps and going through spots is like two or three steps below, you know, a Yuka Sakazaki or a Hikaru Shida. And just,
Chris Statlander for that matter.
Yeah, exactly.
It just feels
to me like Britt could use like an extra couple months, like specifically training with somebody like a Mako Satomura or an Aja Kong or somebody that can at least try to get her to speed on the bumping side of the fence.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like Yuka Sakazaki, I think she like didn't like realize this, and so she just kind of kept trying to do her stuff, but like
yeah,
Baker it didn't work. Like, it's like Yeah, and I just, like, she didn't make really make adjustments here. But, so, thankfully, this didn't last too long. It was,
if we're going to talk cerebral wrestling, I think part of the wrestling intelligence is to know when your opponent's not up to speed and, you know, and adjust accordingly. And,
yeah.
Unfortunately, I think Yuka, it took a little bit for her to finally realize, like, oh, shit, this isn't going to work. But, you know, that being said, she still kind of got over with the crowd, though.
Yes,
I will say
really
that.
Was.
And she gets the shock win, too.
Yeah. So,
see that coming, so.
Yeah, sets up this post-match angle here, though.
Yeah, with complete with a curb job on the ropes.
Oh,
which,
God.
You know, we all call it a curb stomp. I'm not going to get into what an actual curb job is, because it's quite gruesome, actually.
Yeah, better not.
They heavily alluded to it with her, you know, quote unquote, losing a tooth.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
They sold that pretty well. So, yeah, for what that's worth. So, moving on, we have, you know, one of the advertised matches of the night, in which we have three of the executive vice presidents, Kenny Omega, Nick Jackson, Matt Jackson, and Adam Page, up against a kind of a hodgepodge team of The Butcher and The Blade and Pentagon Jr. and Rey Fénix. I had not a lot of hope for this match. I thought they were going to, once again, misuse the Lucha Bros. However, it seemed like the Lucha Bros are actually pretty over with the crowd anyway. Mm-hmm. So that was good. Especially in light of all the free publicity that Pentagon has gotten in the last couple of weeks and they run up to the Super Bowl.
Yeah. Again, just imagine not loving Fénix and Pentagon Jr. Can't relate.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, that's a world I just don't want to live in.
It worked out much better than expected. I will give it that in terms of how they structured everything around and just kind of making sure that Butcher and Blade were doing sort of all the dirty work and such and letting Penta and Fénix just go ham like they normally tend to in these sorts of matches. So.
Well, when Penta was the lone guy getting, you know, hassled by the Elite, you know, in the corner spots, I was like, oh shit, this is it. They're gonna job him out hard. But instead, Pentagon gets the win over the tag team co-champion Adam Page. So I have a bone to pick with this SCU becoming the number one contenders when Pentagon just got a direct pin on on a tag team champion.
Yeah, here's the thing. They did allude to it in commentary about the match prior and that the 8-man didn't count towards the tag rankings, but that there would be implications down the line given that particular pin. So I wouldn't be surprised with the rematch happening next week, which was something that was announced later in the show between SCU and the Kenny Hangman contingent, that whoever probably comes out of that match, the Lucha Bros could arguably challenge at Revolution. We still do have a couple weeks until we.
Well,
they
also mentioned a tag team battle royale that's going to be coming up in Atlanta in a couple of weeks. So I think
interesting. Gonna, okay.
So yeah, maybe we should watch out for that.
Great. Maybe we'll just get another fucking like 4-way tag match. Yippee.
Yeah. Right. Lawrence, what did you think of this?
I fell asleep during this, so I couldn't tell you.
Okay then.
I know. I just legitimately was just very tired.
we do all work for a living, so.
Yeah, I like worked out after work, so I'm like I'm pretty beat. So
I mean, look, your gains are more important than pro wrestling sometimes.
Absolutely,
so.
Chris. I appreciate that.
Well, in any event, I thought that the match was fairly good, but let's face it, this was all angle building because, of course, you know, Adam Page refused to ever tag in the Young Bucks, so of course, you know, he ate the pin because of it.
Oh man, Adam Page. This is an interesting direction they're going in with him, huh?
Yeah, interesting. That's a good, nice way of putting it, yes.
Okay, yeah. Here's my take on this, because it's something that I sort of realized throughout the match and with the weird ending that they had as well, with Hangman deciding to not tag in either of the Young Bucks and then getting dropped for it. It's kind of the sad, realistic take on it, in which it feels like Adam Page has been driven to a really terrible habit by the fact that the people who are supposed to be his friends are just really shitty people who just only have in use for him when they need something from him, which unfortunately is 100% relatable in modern day society. So.
Oh man, Chris!
Wow,
you just made me like sad all of a sudden. Wow. What the fuck?
How do you think I feel?
Oh my god!
How cerebral of you, Chris, when we're discussing a Kenny Omega match? You get all intellectual and cerebral.
Oh dear God! Look, the only thing that's been cerebral out of Kenny Omega's departure from New Japan is just the realization that he needs the New Japan roster to get good matches out of way more than they need him. Here's your five-star take.
Yeah. Here's my five-star take. Kota Ibushi helped sell out the Tokyo Dome. Kenny never did. That's my hot take.
Oh. Wow.
Yeah, so anyway, so the angle billing continues, but we cut to a commercial break, and when we come back, Tony Schiavone is in the ring with Kenny Omega about to, you know, do another spot interview, but then we cut backstage, and Pac is there. Good old Billy the Fish is there making threatening gestures towards Riho in the during an interview, to the point where Omega finally agrees that... yes, I'll give you your rubber match at long last. Just whatever you do, don't hurt Riho. Pac, to his credit, says, "What? Are you kidding me? I would never, hurt Riho. I'm not a beast, but she is." Enter Nyla Rose, powerbomb onto a table. Not through. It didn't break.
The Japanese table makes its debut on the AEW Dynamite. Just want to congratulate it on an excellent night.
Yes. It had an excellent debut tonight. I actually thought that was a pretty good segment, though, because I love how it transitioned into that.
Yes.
I mean, also, I would assume Nyla Rose is going to win the title next week, but I mean, I can't be certain.
Wait and see what happens in that regard. I will say this, though. I mean, if the good folks at DDT who partner up with the AEW contingent from time to time are looking at this, I think this particular segment just gave you a match for a Peter Pan in the future. Just let Riho and Pac go at each other.
Oh, my.
Pac's mystique might get destroyed entirely once Riho decides to whoop him, but look.
No, that was a great segment, and it just showed, and especially the line that Billy the Fish delivered about how Michael Nakazawa, you just don't seem to care about him, because I've already been hassling him.
Yeah. Like, so, is Pac wrong though? Again, like that, it's one of those good promos in which like he hit certain points that are completely 100% honest, but he was just such a smug dick about it that it's just like, well, yeah, you are the hero of the story.
Well,
so.
Yeah, but again, if you go back through the history of pro wrestling and you see the babyface heel divide and you just wonder, how is this guy actually the heel? Like, if you look through it, like, how was Macho Man Randy Savage the heel when the Mega Powers exploded? When Hulk Hogan was going after his shoot wife, how is Macho Man or anything like that? Whenever it comes down to that, like what was the Rusev and Cena feud a few years back?
Oh,
I remember the commentary is like, how is Rusev the heel in this?
Yeah.
But anyway, pro wrestling logic, or lack thereof. From there, we move on to a taped Darby Allin promo where he just basically has a flamethrower and shoots a cardboard cutout of Chris Jericho and Sammy Guevara.
Okay, but listen, his mixtape was fire, literally and figuratively.
Bum-bum-bum.
Shh.
So, yeah, and that's basically all that happened. That.
Okay. So we move
on.
Love it.
So we move on. Simple to the, man. So we move on to the fifth match of the evening. Joey Janela versus Kip Sabian, and yeah, I'm about as excited as you can guess with this.
You know, and here's the unfortunate thing, because I do like Kip's whole like demeanor and like the act itself. I think it's something that can succeed within the middle portion of the AEW card, and you need guys like that. I just think the problem is that feud between him and Janela, which should be kind of a slam dunk between Bad Boy and Super Bad, just being sort of transformed about, oh, I dated Penelope before, now you're dating her, ha ha ha, let's make like elementary school type jokes on Twitter to begin this and literally wreck all of this before it begins, which is exactly what happened. Like, and people, at the very least with the crowd, they were behind Joey at certain points during the match, things like that, which is good that he's getting those reactions in that regard, but this just feels like it's stagnating both guys rather than the making one or the other.
The finish was just an absolute wet fart.
Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It was a train wreck. Well, I mean, at least we can... I mean, this probably is not the end of this angle, but at least we can say that they didn't waste a pay-per-view slot on this. I guess, maybe.
Wait... I mean, who knows? There's still another, like, 3 weeks until we finally get to Revolution, so...
Well, that's true. That is true.
They might drag this on, so, yeah. But, anyways, it was a thing that happened. Kip Sabian does pick up the win here on Dirty Tactics, so I guess it's not the end of this story as of yet. So, from there, we go backstage, where Chris Jericho is berating Jon Moxley for taking Santana's eye in the language of, what kind of man, you know... blindsides a man and literally takes his eye out.
Yeah, I had to laugh at that. It's like, yes, what man indeed?
Chris Jericho is just so good in this role right now. Like, I can't. Just...
It is. It's great. I keep saying that this champion persona is, of course, you know, just the older, more experienced version of his WCW character.
Yeah, exactly. It's his WCW character after getting rich and successful, which is just perfect.
And becoming 80% vodka. But that was cute. So now we've set up a eye for an eye in which Moxley and Santana will go at each other. But you know what? You know, Santana may actually have a distinct advantage just owing to the fact that we will be, you know, this weekend be having a singles match between Jon Moxley and Minoru Suzuki. So
true. And Santana had a fire promo there to end things up during that as well too. Cannot discount that.
Yeah, no, he really did. No, that was good. I think that'll be good. I think that'll be a good match next week.
Mm-hmm.
We then cut to what I thought was a commercial, but it turned out to be another Dark Order video promo.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I didn't really pay attention to it until I heard join Dark Order. I was like, oh shit. You know?
Yeah. It was just basically like kind of the mockery of like the commercials you see on TV for like any sort of like health pills or like if situations with like stuff that you take if you're having like a loved one that's suffering from cancer, whatever it is.
Oh yeah,
they basically parodied that, which was fine.
Yeah, I totally thought that is what I totally thought that's what it was, and because I tuned out. So
mm-hmm. Yeah, and then after that we go into Hangman Adam Page about to, I guess, do some sort of interview, but then trying to get out of it. Then the Young Bucks show up, bickering happens. They steal his beer, but then Adam Page in the most Reseda California move I could have possibly seen in my lifetime just brings out a pit hole pitcher and just he wrestled in PWG at least once, so he knows what those deals were at the time in which that region hall was still alive and well.
Shout out to Dion and Bunches, because we pulled that shit at when we were going to Glory Pro back in 17. We pulled that shit too, so
phenomenal.
But I'm trying to turn it around on this whole thing with Paige. I'm trying to look at it from a more of a the aspect they're trying to go with. It still just doesn't sit great with me. I mean, just for like I said, there's a lot of personal reasons why, but I mean, I had to say I did kind of fucking chuckle at this fucking segment. It was pretty funny, I'm not gonna lie. I thought it was pretty hilarious, but
I mean, you've gone over on this show why you didn't like this angle.
So, yeah, I'm conflicted, because I also would probably drink if I like had friends like the Young Bucks. So,
ooh, damn, they would drive you to drinking. Is that Bucks would drive you to drinking? Is that what you're saying here, Lawrence?
I'm not going to confirm nor deny
or
that.
Deny it. Well, damn. Lawrence, plausible deniability. I love it.
Oh, my goodness. Well, from one questionable angle to the next, we finally have what constitutes a main event segment, and it is the long-advertised Cody Rhodes taking 10 lashes from Maxwell Jacob Freeman. I don't think we really need to mince words here about the questionableness of doing this segment in Alabama during Black History Month, do we?
No, that was pretty noticeable. And
I didn't really think about that.
But yeah, it kind of gives it a whole new level of cringe after you realize it. Unfortunately,
yeah, this was very...
I mean, this was already in questionable taste as it was.
Yeah,
this was so drawn out, though. It was like, oh my god, by the point I was just like, okay guys, can we just like get this over with, please? Yeah. And just like,
I think the very fact that we were in our group Twitter DMs just going over different characters of Samurai Showdown and talking about Jeff's weekend with his daughter in Indy last weekend around while this all was happening just kind of demonstrates how little of a shit we gave about it.
Yeah, I mean, it really did drag on, and, you know, the entire goddamn locker room emptied out this whole segment. It's like, holy shit. I mean, yeah, we don't want to make this a spectacle or nothing. But
yeah, for sure.
And, yeah, and you know what? Again, this also, I mean, yeah, questionableness aside about that, this also isn't 1994 ECW.
Yeah, you know? It's not, and if anything too, just like Lawrence's co-host on Poor on the Rough, Isaac, just tweeted out, Cody's lashes ain't got shit on Takeda's bump under kitchen knives the other day.
Which... Jesus.
Oh man. 50 stitches later, boys.
Yeah.
Oh shit.
Yeah.
I'm going to go so far as to say those lashes were shit compared to the Moxley Omega match.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where, again, just it being as drawn out as it was, and I get trying to draw sympathy for the good guy, resisting it, his family and friends and all that. I get what they were going for. I just feel that there will be a certain portion of the audience that will eat that shit up still, and then the other portion of the audience is just like, can we go home already, please?
Okay, so let me ask you this. Would this have been worse or better if we had flip-flopped the 8-man match and this segment?
I think the 8-man would have fit better in this particular spot, because at the very least you would still be pushing a main storyline that they're doing with the tag champions in a division that they say matters a whole lot in this company.
Yeah. Yeah, and then it would include the Pac post-match thing. I mean,
yeah, exactly.
If you put that whole thing together, put that as the main event, and have this at the top of the hour.
It kind of sets up everything for next week, yeah.
Yeah,
I agree.
That makes a lot better continuity. But I mean, like I said, we've said before, we don't like, you know, the opening segment promos that go 15, 20 minutes, even though AEW has only done that twice so far. Mm-hmm. And to their credit, they've both been good, but I still hate that they're doing it because it still is, you know, Monday Night Raw shtick. Well, now, you know, ending with a promo, you know, with a skit or a sketch or a segment like this, I think is the same thing. It's still very WWE-esque, you know?
Yeah, I would agree with that, Morris.
I mean, I think if I'm in a live crowd, I think that if, you know, we're going off the air on TV, I want to be seen out with an actual wrestling match rather than an extended promo.
Yeah.
So, and that you know, that's just me. But with that, we wrap up episode 18 of AEW Dynamite from Huntsville, Alabama. So, pros and cons, Lawrence.
Pros. There were some pretty cool like promo pieces on this show.
Yeah, actually, like, I agree with that.
Yeah, like I like you said with like the Pac and Omega stuff was pretty good. Even though I was still kind of sleeping through that, it sounded really good. And there was also the like Santana, you know, when after he got his eye poked or whatnot. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What else was there that I'm like forgetting? And then obviously the Adam Page thing was pretty interesting, but that was my main takeaway. The rest of it, I don't know, for me, like, the show just felt like it kind of dragged a little bit. The matches really just didn't seem to matter too much. I just thought it was a pretty skippable show. I mean, you're not really gonna miss a whole lot if you don't watch this episode.
I do agree with Lawrence on the situation that it feels like however they choose to do the hype package next week, before they open up next week's Dynamite episode, will probably give you like the best summary possible of everything that happened this week in this week's episode without kind of having to sit through the 2 hours, which, again, we're not necessarily saying that it was a bad show by no means, but it was definitely one of those where they did some world building here and there, but there wasn't anything, I think, memorable specifically that stuck out like crazily high enough to where we're going, yeah, you have to go out of your way to see this kind of thing. Which in pro wrestling those happen from time to time, but
yeah, it seemed like I said that nothing on this show was really actively bad except possibly Britt Baker, her wrestling performance. I didn't see the promo because you said that was on the bootleg fight feed. But
yeah,
nothing was actually actively bad. In fact, I quite liked Moxley versus Ortiz, and I also the eight man was pretty good. You know, I was happy with the result at the very least. But yeah, nothing was actively bad. But it just seemed like it was a lot of just moving pieces around and just, you know, story setup without much actual consequence in the matches themselves. So yeah, I take that. I do take that. One thing we forgot to mention is that during that last segment, Brandi Rhodes came out not in Nightmare Collective mode.
Yeah, which was the biggest thing that, to kind of make us consider that this Nightmare Collective thing might be at a tail end, if not completely done for at
just
this point.
Forgotten about, basically.
Yeah, yeah, it's like, I mean, they're already trying to wipe it away, you know?
Yeah, like, it doesn't even, like, exist, so I think they might have just killed it dead, finally, and
yeah. But the Dark Order's still here, which, by the way, you know, they I mean, their video promo was good for when I started paying attention to it, finally, when I finally twigged it was a Dark Order promo. But yeah, as far as my pros and cons, I'm just going to put it at Mox and Ortiz, the Eight-Man, Pox promo, which led into Nyla attacking Riho, which, hey, that works for me. Jericho in Santana's promo.
Yeah,
was a high spot. Yeah, so those are my pros. And everything else is kind of there for the most part.
Yeah, for sure.
So, and next week, we're in Austin, Texas. It'll be my brother's birthday, but he hasn't watched wrestling since the Attitude Era, so I don't think he's going to be at that show.
Yeah. So, okay, boys, let me put it this way, because they do have at least two of the dark matches that are going to be coming up the day before, and I have good news and bad news. The bad news is we get to see Sonny Kiss, but we get to see him against Jimmy Havoc. So,
Jesus Christ.
But I do have good news, though. The good news is we do get a Riho versus Shoko Nakajima match.
Oh, my goodness.
Yep. That is a thing.
Okay.
Like,
well,
I will tune into Dark for that alone. 100%.
Okay, I will have to make time for that this week. Yeah, I just couldn't do it this week, so I had a lot going on. So, anyway, Lawrence, plug yourself.
Follow me at LOB_3. Soon, we will be releasing the fifth episode of Pyro and the Rough. That's, well, I don't know, soon, but pretty soon. Maybe this weekend. I don't know. It all depends, but we're working on a time to deliver that to you guys, covering various things going on in wrestling in Japan right now, which there's quite a few. So there's a lot of news coming out right now. So yeah, especially about Cyber Agent and Hanoa and DDT. So
I figure like that's the biggest item you guys probably have for sure, and that's a whole lot to unpack in and of itself.
Yeah. So.
All right.
Interesting
Chris.
Stuff.
All right. So for me, you can follow me over on Twitter and Instagram at Brazilian Fury. That's Brazilian with an S instead of a Z. You can also now actually go ahead and follow us. Follow me on Twitter as well through Sounds on Sticks. That is the Twitter handle for the Soundtracks on the Sticks podcasting, which myself and my friend Jordan Young both launched this past weekend, talking about the soundtrack of Final Fantasy VIII. And we will be eventually getting some more episodes done over the next couple of weeks. Donkey Kong Country 2 looks like it's going to be episode 2 specifically. So
hell yeah.
Be on the lookout for that.
You can find me at Strong Style Story without the E in Style on Twitter. My personal Twitter is at GD Wessel. And of course, you can also listen to me on my other podcast, Busting Balls, soundcloud.com/busting-balls. We just released a new episode previewing the knockout stages of the Champions League and Europa League. Mm-hmm. So check that out. And of course, you know, programming note, John Moxley of this parish will be back in New Japan on Sunday against Minoru Suzuki, defending his IWGP US heavyweight title, probably still wearing an eye patch too. So, the professionalism remains. So, Lawrence, Chris, any final words?
No, I don't have any final words actually.
Nope. Thanks again for sitting with us through roughly an hour or so of your AEW Dynamite coverage. We'll see you next week.
Yep. Take care. See you from Austin. Bye-bye.